Welcome back to the Cinema Dirtbags. It's me, RT Triple P, Rick Teat, your podcast pimpin' papa. Here with one of the smoothest love machines to ever set 10 toes on this earth.
This is that wild thing, Stephen King, keeping you company here on the Dirtbag airwaves all night long.
Happy Valentine's Day!
Oh, can you feel the tension in the air right now? I can feel it down in my plums. All right, I can't do this anymore. Like I said, we got something a little special for you today in honor of Valentine's Day. So we are one dirtbag short tonight, being with the snow and everything that's going on with the weather. Scott couldn't make it out tonight, but Steven, any kind of trailers, any news, anything going on?
All right, so this week, I have to unfortunately and start off with a little somber news. I just want to make mention because I know he's an actor that was, you know, near and dear to a lot of our hearts. He's an absolute legend, a film king, man. Christopher Plummer, and we lost a legend this week, man.
Yeah, it's rough, man. I just talked about him a couple weeks ago in Knives Out.
Yeah, he's a beautiful mind he was in. You know, he's just All the Money in the World was another movie that people might know him from. It's
Sound of Music.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. We're losing a legend, but you know we want to you know pour out a little love here for him on the cast.
Cheers to him.
Cheers.
He was in his 90s, I believe.
That's so right.
He lived he lived a long way.
Accomplished life. 217 acting credits. If that says anything, that's so.
He was busy.
Hell of a resume.
R.I.P. to a legend.
R.I.P. Well, moving on. There is a trailer that I came across a couple weeks back for a movie that is called Nomadland. That's coming out next Friday, February 19th. But this one looks awesome.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting, I want to say, like, document. We were watching the trailer earlier.
It almost looked like a documentary, but
yeah. This is directed by Chloe Zhao and starring Frances McDormand, who she can do no wrong on the screen as far as I'm concerned. And she plays a woman that after losing, she loses all of her belongings, really all of her money in the Great Recession. And she decides to embark on this journey across America, primarily it looks like the western section of the states, and just living as like a nomad, living out of her van. And it just looks like a really, really cool study of, of people and interaction between folks and just a really raw dose of interaction between people, which is something right now that I think we absolutely need, man. It's like we're malnourished in a way, I feel like, because we've had a year full of distance, and it's something that I think that a lot of people are saying, like, oh man, I've seen people say, I'm never going back. You know, this is the way I like this distance, and I respect that, you know, to each their own. But man, speaking for myself here, I miss people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I miss the movies. You know, we talk about that first and foremost every week, but I miss just folks going to concerts and just, you know, going and seeing events together and just experiencing art as a collective. I miss that a lot. And this is kind of like a small snapshot of her interacting with people as she goes across the West, and it just looks like a really, really emotional picture.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out for sure. Did it say when it was coming out?
Yeah, that comes out next Friday, February 19th.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I've only seen her, I believe. Oh, I saw her. I think she was in like the third Transformers movie, but I saw her in Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And fantastic in that.
Yeah.
So definitely going to check
that,
this one out.
That track record with the Coen brothers. Like, you know, I mentioned Blood Simple early on in the episode one, but yeah, her in Fargo, and she's just a great, great actress. And, you know, we talked about a movie last week that maybe wasn't so much of the chicken soup for the soul type movie. This one feels like probably one you could wash that movie down with. Wash down the devil all the time with a little Nomadland, it looks like. Yeah, that's really the one trailer that stood out to me. It doesn't come out this week, but it's one that I really want to make people aware of if you haven't seen it yet. Go check out the trailer for Nomadland, and I mean, hopefully you guys feel the same way we do.
Yeah, check that out for sure. So we had posted a poll up a few weeks back.
Sweet.
To keep in the spirit of Valentine's Day. We picked three, you know, romantic style movies for you to choose. I posted forth for getting Sarah Marshall. Steve, you posted.
Yeah, mine was, and I'm sure if anybody, if you, I feel like people could have guessed mine, a little My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah. And Scott put forth The Notebook, and to be honest, I thought mine was going to come in a distant third, because I know a lot of our viewers probably care for, you know, the slasher type horror films, and I would imagine a whole bunch more would have loved to hear three men speak about The Notebook for an hour. But my film won.
It jumped out. You know, it was close early on. There was it was neck and neck for like that first three or four days or so. And then out of nowhere, there was a surge for Miss Sarah Marshall, and never looked back. It won handily. So congratulations on the first poll pick win there, yeah. Man.
So this movie actually has quite a bit of significance for my story, because this was the film that me and my wife were watching when I asked her to be my girlfriend at the time, all those almost a decade ago.
Very
so
cool.
To keep with the Valentine's Day theme, you know, love is in the air. So before we dive into that film, we're going to talk a little bit about what's been on our radar this week. Steve, what have you been catching up on?
Okay, so I got a... Guys, this week I got a little bit of a deeper dig for you, and I hope you guys are as excited when I tell you about this movie as I was when I heard about it. This movie is from 2020. This is a brand new release from the very cool cats over at the American Genre Film Archive. So okay. You already know with these guys what you're getting when you hear that they're doing a production, because they are kings and queens of finding these crazy cool, whether they're shot on video or just deep dig productions that would never get any sort of release or treatment at all. They are the ones that go hunt down the deepest of the deep and really shed some light on these really crazy, bonkers movies. And this one is pretty unique. This is AGFA's Horror Trailer Show. And Vinegar Syndrome launched this, I think it was like late last year during their Black Friday sale, they posted this, and as soon as I saw it, I was like, I have to own that.
Right?
I love trailers.
Uh-huh.
The trailer is a different art form now than it was kind of back in the day. When you had these exploitation movies coming out, just like a machine, like these directors were eating it up, and they were firing off these trailers that were a lot of times better than the movie itself. They would create something that would just put, you know, butts in seats. And there were brilliant trailers that were, and if you go back and you watch stuff from the 70s and 80s, those drive-in trailers or those grindhouse trailers,
classic.
Man, they're good. They're a good time. It's a lot of fun, because you really do sort of get the essence of that movie, you know, in a morsel. Like with trailers now, you get like four or five trailers before the movie launches. You know, a Marvel movie.
You've practically already seen the movie by then, yeah.
Right. And so it works the same way, but it's funny because it's this charming way for this type of movie where, you know you're not, the movie's probably going to be low quality, but the trailer is, it's an art form. So this thing is like a mixtape. They've hand selected and curated these trailers and put them together in a unique show. So it's not just trailer. Mm-hmm. And they're lined up, but they've created like what would be a movie out of it. So at the beginning, you got like 5 minutes where you have like the ads for food that would show at the theaters. And then, you know, it'd be like 5 minutes until the movie.
Right. Popcorn, right? And all,
yeah,
that.
Food looks terrible in these old trailers. That's the crazy. Like, if you watch these things, the hot dogs look like disgusting logs of brown.
My favorite.
Oh, it's awful. But the work they had to put into this, you know, just the labor of love that it is. That, you know, they had a 35mm print struck and scanned for their release. And that alone is a huge, huge task. And they, you know, they had to put in all the work of like repairing these old pieces of film and cleaning and setting and scanning and just hundreds of these trailers that they had to work through to figure out which ones they wanted to hand select. And, you know, it's kind of cool. The way that they stylized it, there's certain trailers that they messed with some of the color to kind of create a original show feel for them. Like they would take an old black and white trailer. There was a trailer for like a double feature of The Vampire's Coffin and The Robot versus the Aztec Mummy. This was the double feature that was a trailer for. And they neoned it up. And anybody knows me already here, like the first six episodes, I've established one thing. It's this.
You love the brightness.
My neons. And they did it. And I loved the little touch that they did there. Some of these trailers, though, they have deteriorated to the point where you can see like the actual damage to the film creates a really interesting effect in the trailer where like words skip and slur, and but it creates like this weird dreamy thing. It is the weird. It's a lot of fun to kind of see these old things in action. I will say I'm gonna call out one trailer in particular. It's hands down the most bonkers trailer I've ever seen in my life. And it's shot in, they tried to set it up like, you know how you'd have like those old ads for movies where the reporter would stand outside the theater and people would be leaving the theater. What'd you think of Nightmare on Elm Street? Oh, it scared the hell out of me. It's like that, but it was a double feature for I Dismember Ma and The Blood Spattered Bride, which is, I Dismember Ma, I've never seen, but The Blood Spattered Bride is outstanding. It's a great movie. Sort of like the inspiration for Kill Bill. One of the inspirations for that. Okay. So it's a really cool movie, but this trailer is this guy standing outside interviewing people who are actors, but there's like an exchange between like a couple who are fighting over whether the movie was good or not. And like, you can tell it's like an old married couple, really funny. But then there's a guy who laughs like a dolphin. Is this thing. And it is one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen, but also one of the most unsettling things I've ever seen. And I just, you know, I really wanted to shout this movie out because it is a movie on its own. It's a show, the way they call it a show. There's another like bonus movie on the disc called Video Rage, which is it's the same idea only with direct-to-video trailers, and it's even further down the rabbit hole. I'm not going to really go into that because it's worth it if you love these things, but my God, there's some weird stuff. But man, this AGFA's horror trailer show, very, very cool. If you like horror movies and you have a love for old cinema experience, like in just that cool old theater vibe, man. This movie was a blast, and I recommend the hell out of it. Deep dive, you know, for cats that kind of like this thing. I loved it. It's my jam. So that's my watch. Just got one I wanted to talk about this week.
That's fascinating. I've never heard of a trailer mashup.
Yeah.
Movie.
Yeah, the mixtape thing is like the best way to think of it. You know, it's like they hand select. You know, you hand select songs for somebody. They hand-selected these trailers for these horror fans that would be out there, these, you know, just lovers of old horror cinema. And just, there's an ad for a football called The Flamer that's available at the concession stand, you know, and it's this light-up football. And you just admit, you're immediately transported to the drive-in, right? Where, like, you just picture these
exactly
kids
what I was thinking.
Hucking the ball around before the movie and getting pissed off because they're doing it right smack down in the middle of your feature. So it's, man, it's just a wonderful love letter to that kind of thing. And definitely check it out if you love that old vibe.
It makes me want to go to the Twin Drive-In.
Yeah, it does.
So, if you have been listening to me for the past 3 or 4 weeks, you've picked up a theme where I like really, really dumb comedies. Steven, have you ever watched Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story?
I've not seen that. I know the movie exactly what you're talking about. I've never seen Walk Hard.
So, Dewey Cox, played by John C. Reilly, and it's, what's the best way I can describe this? It's almost like a caricature of every musical artist film that has come out. You know, it's got a little bit of your, you know, Johnny Cash.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit of possibly Ray Charles's film.
Okay. Ray?
Ray.
Yeah.
And I should have got that. slurred off the whiskey right now. It's an incredibly stupid movie, but I laugh from start to finish. So it starts as him as a kid with his brother, who his brother's a musician and he's playing the piano and his dad's real proud of him and they want to go outside and play. And his brother's making notes of ain't nothing bad gonna happen today. I got a lot to do in this long, long life of mine. And they end up in a machete fight at the end of this scene. And Dewey Cox ends up cutting him in half. And probably the funniest joke in the movie, to me at least, is the dad spends the rest of the movie telling Dewey, wrong kid died.
Oh, shit.
But it's Dewey going through his, like, country music phase, right? Like he's in a talent show as a teenager and he's, you know, he's killing it. And the entire audience is going crazy. They're like doing drugs and having sex and all this stuff. And they go home at the end of the night. Like the pastor from the church is there and he's, yeah, you know, I know what you've done, son. And he's like, man, I was just singing a song saying, hold your hand. And he said, he's like, you know, the devil's got hands. You know what he uses them for? For holding. And this girl that was there is like fancying him, and he's talking about running away, and it's played by, she's played by Kristen Wiig, right? And of course she's, Kristen Wiig is probably 30, mid 30s at this time, and she's like, yeah, I'm running off with Dewey and I'm his 12-year-old girlfriend. So he goes off and like does this country music thing, and she's breeding kids left and right, and she's telling him, like, every time he's leaving the house, she's like trying to motivate him. She's like, yeah, you're never going to make it. But it's him going through decade and decade, and he ends up finding this band that he goes through, and there's a couple unnamed guys that I don't know, but Tim Meadows is one of them.
Okay.
And if you know Tim Meadows, I've only seen him in like bits and pieces here and there, but everything he does is hilarious to me, right?
Yeah.
He's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Right.
He plays a cannibal, and every scene of his is hilarious. In this one, he's, you know, he's a band member, and he keeps doing these drugs that are like from decade to decade, right? And Dewey busting this way, and they're after show, and they're smoking weed, right? He's like, yeah, you don't want any part of this, Dewey. He's like, why? Is it going to get me hooked on it? He's like, no, it's not habit forming. It's got to be expensive, huh? And he's like, no, it's the cheapest drug there is. And he just keeps talking about how like positive the drug is. You don't want it, Dewey. And then later on in the movie, like, he busts in the bathroom and he's doing cocaine with these two girls, and it makes all your bad feelings turn into good feelings. It's a nightmare. But, you know, it goes through, like I said, decade to decade of Dewey's life. And I won't give any more than that. But it's a ridiculously stupid, funny, hilarious movie. I believe it came out maybe 2009, 2010.
It's like 2007. I was just going to say
2007.
Yeah, it's right there in that mix of all that, like, Judd Apatow craziness, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I kept hearing about this movie over and over and over again, and it hit a streaming service, one of the Netflix or something. And I was like, okay, I eventually got to catch it. And I couldn't stop laughing. So check out Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story. You can catch it on the cheap. I believe I bought it at Vintage Stock recently for, I don't know, $6.99 on Blu-ray.
Can't beat it.
Hilarious, man.
Man, you know, John C. Reilly's great. He really is. He's got a delivery that's just so unique and so funny. It's been a long time since I heard about Walk Hard, but that, yeah.
So many funny parts of the movie that I can't get into right now. So Walk Hard, 2007, I believe. Excuse me, Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story.
Yeah.
Check that out. So, we are going to get into the meat and potatoes of this Valentine's Day episode for you guys and review Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Now, this is a 2008 film directed by Nicholas Stoller. So, Jason Segel, who also plays the main character in the film, wrote this film. He actually wrote this off of several breakups in his life, one of which was Linda Cardellini.
Ooh.
And I think I read three other breakups. And so this film is kind of obviously based off of that. And so it's got quite the cast here. Obviously, I mentioned Jason Segel. Kristen Bell plays Sarah Marshall. Russell Brand.
Oh, Alda Snow.
Snow. Mila Kunis, who plays Rachel.
They got Bill Hader.
Bill Hader is his brother-in-law. I believe his sister is married to Bill Hader. He's one of the funniest. Jonah Hill.
Yeah, I can't count out Jonah Hill, man.
And you can't forget Kunu.
The boy, Paul Rudd.
But, the film basically centers on Jason Segel's character, Peter Bretter. He is a composer for the film that Sarah Marshall stars in, which is called Crime Scene of the Crime.
Right.
And it essentially starts with their breakup scene, right?
And let's get this out of the way early, because it needs to be said for anybody diving into this movie or anybody who has dove into this movie. This movie hangs dong.
A lot of dong.
A substantial amount of times. And it's all Jason Segel's dong.
You can tell he wrote it. He is very, very proud of his dong. A lot of dong hangs in this one.
The pen is in his hand.
So yeah, he gets a phone call that Sarah Marshall, his girlfriend, is coming back from seemingly a trip. And he's getting the house around. He gets out of the shower. He's just in the towel. She's
eating
in the living room.
Mixing bowl of Fruit Loops.
He's big about his cereal.
It's great.
You know.
But yeah, sorry.
She's standing there and she's kind of frozen. He drops the towel and he's shaking it all over the place. And
you get that sound effect. The slapping on the thighs, dude. And it's just like you instantly know you're in deep water. And like, it's like the next part of the sequence, and it's just he drops the bomb on him,
mm-hmm.
and he drops the towel on her and the audience for that matter, and it's just boop, dong's out.
It is definitely an unrated film.
Yeah, for sure. That scene kind of shocks everybody because it's right out of the gate, and that's really the brilliance of the scene, because this should be, and it is for all intents and purposes, a very sad scene. But it's completely offset by the fact uh-huh. he's just walking around stark-ass naked the entire time.
And this actually happened to him. I read one of his breakups. I don't believe it was Linda Cardinelli. But one of his breakups, it actually happened while he was naked. So this guy lives a wild life. She eventually tells him that it's somebody else. So right off the bat, you know there's another love interest there, correct?
Right.
Right? So what happens next, Steve?
So we have a really great scene early on here with Mr. Bill Hader. He comes in right after the breakup happens, and they're out at a bar, and Jason Segel's kind of, you know, breaking the news, really, and Bill Hader's trying to walk him through it. And Bill Hader's one of my favorite comedians or act, you know, just comedic actors. His timing is out of this world, buddy. And, you know, in this movie, he plays what, you know, he takes a role that honestly what would be, you know, kind of like a second, third, fourth fiddle. But really, every time he's on the screen, he's delivering this, like, his character is so much fun. And he's one that I was always excited when I saw him on the screen. I knew I was going to laugh. And we got Peter talking about how he just needs to have sex with somebody.
Right.
Because he knows that his now ex-girlfriend, Sarah Marshall, is having sex with somebody else. And he feels like I got to even the playing field here.
It's that old adage. The best way to get over somebody is to get under somebody.
That's the old adage.
That's what I've been told.
Who knows, man? Who knows?
So I've been told.
That interaction sort of drives us into kind of the scene leading up to where he takes off for the Hawaii is where most of this movie takes place, which is absolutely gorgeous.
It makes me want to go to Hawaii. I want to go to Hawaii so bad.
Oh man. Yeah, for sure. And like, but right before, you know, he gets the idea to go, you got Bill Hader over at his house, and we get a couple sequences of him trying to use the old adage, getting under somebody. And my God, some of the most awkward, I will say, hi, the girl that he's with, and she just keeps saying hi. I was crying laughing.
You want to gag me?
Kind
of now.
Oh my God, it is such a funny sequence. And
yeah. Hader tells him to go to Hawaii, and he mentions, yeah, Sarah was always talking about going to Hawaii. He's like, well, I wouldn't go to Hawaii then. And then, you know, Peter's giving him sad. Oh, okay, go to Hawaii then. Yeah. Whatever, you know.
That, yeah, from there, he hops, he buys his ticket and heads out to Hawaii without any, like, reservations. He just says, I'm going to go. And he arrives at the hotel. You know, they throw the layover his neck. He's feeling a little bit of the weight off his shoulders. Maybe he can start to heal here. And he goes to the reception desk, and we meet another one of our main characters, Rachel Jansen, played by Mila Kunis, mm-hmm. as you mentioned. And, it's funny because he has no reservation. She's like, is there anything available? I'm kind of here on a whim. And she's like, yeah, no, we're all booked up. But we got this, what was the suite? It's like
the Kapua suite. The $6,000 a night room.
That's all that's left. And she's like, what did she say? It's like, this is like for Oprah or Celine Dion or whatever. This is not for like anybody normally to come stay here. But as soon as he starts to try to figure out if he can stay here, he can't. I can't afford this. There's Sarah Marshall outside. We see her. The worst has happened. We've arrived at Hawaii at the same time. We've got Peter and Sarah at the resort.
So she eventually comes up into the room where they're at.
Yeah, right. Of course,
you know, Peter's stressing out. You know, here she is. Do I need to button my shirt up? Do I need to lower it?
Oh, my God. I love that. Like, yeah. I wish I wouldn't wear this fucking shirt.
Right. He's so embarrassed about the shirt. So, yeah, they confront each other. Peter, what are you doing here? Did you follow me? Da-da-da-da-da. And then all this snow shows up.
He does. Mr. Russell Brand and all of his charisma comes scampering up. And he doesn't say hello. He doesn't say anything. He just slaps Sarah Marshall on the ass.
On the ass. And then he's worried about his flip-flop. You know, Mrs., I've lost a shoe. You know, it's the exact opposite of this one. It's not an evil version. Right off the bat, he looks like a total idiot. And, you know, they're introducing each other. And, you know, this is my ex-boyfriend.
Well, you know, I was going to make a quick point because I didn't think about it till just now. When he's freaking out about the shirt, later on we'll get to a point where there's a Tommy Bahama shirt introduced. And it was bought by Sarah Marshall. And I wonder if the reason why he didn't want to wear the shirt is because she bought it for him.
That's a good point. And I don't know why you wouldn't want to wear a Tommy Bahama shirt.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, that is elite comfort. I'm telling you right now, if you've never put on a premium Hawaiian shirt, it will change your life. But anyway, Steve, do your point.
Yeah, we got this crazy character in Aldous Snow, and it's pretty much everything that you would think someone like Peter would like have. It's the nightmare scenario. It's the polar opposite of Peter.
Correct.
You know, Peter's he's got a good heart. He's a musician as well, but not successful. And Aldous Snow is this ridiculously successful musician.
Right, he's on like Entertainment Weekly. And
in a band called Infant Sorrow. Which is absolutely ridiculous. Let's be honest, whenever they introduce him for the first time, it's on TV, right? And he's like doing the song, We Have to Do Something.
Yeah.
And he's like humping people.
He's humping people on the side of the road.
It's the most ridiculous thing. So we set him up as this like sex crazed, wild, like music star.
He's like Namaste, right?
Yeah, and then here comes Sarah, your ex girlfriend, and it's with this crazy rock star. It's the nightmare scenario. But yeah, so we get this kind of like awkward exchange between, you know, Jason Siegel's character and Kristen Bell and everybody. They're like, well, you know, you can hang out with us. You can catch dinner, grab dinner while you're here. And he's like, no, I think I'll be okay. And, you know, we got Mila Kunis coming in clutch right behind him. He's like, look, we just finished booking that room for you, sir. The $6,000 room, she gives it to him scot-free.
Scot-free.
And it's just,
it just helps him out completely. And Sarah Marshall's looking at him, you know, of course, with the big eyes. How did you afford that?
Yeah.
And afterwards, you know, they walk off. You know, she tells him to enjoy his vacation. He's like, why would you do that for me?
Right. You
know? She's like, well, she's already here with some guy 3 weeks later. Like, that's kind of screwed up, right? So, yeah, it is. And so, yeah, he ends up booking the Capula suite. So he gets a nice suite. I believe that night is when we meet Jonah Hill's character. He goes to eat at the restaurant, correct?
That's true. Real quick before that, though, we were kind of just jawing off mic about one of the funniest Bill Hader scenes in the movie. And it's because right after, you know, he gets assigned his room, it's this awkward scene where he calls Bill Hader to tell him what's going on, how crazy this is. And he's following Sarah Marshall. And around the resort because they're, you know, fairly close to one another. And Bill Hader is losing it on the other end of the phone. Just like, you idiot, stop following.
It's off screen. What are you doing? And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure I ruined her night. And then immediately after that, it cuts to like this crazy sex scene where he's doing like these crazy yoga poses.
And it's like Arch where she's like Sarah Marshall's like planted on top of him, sitting on like this bridge of a man. It's like the most ridiculous thing you'll ever see.
But yes, they go to Peter goes to the restaurant that night, and Jonah Hill is the host.
Maitre d'.
The maitre d'?
Is that what you would call that, I guess?
That's about right. You know, I don't know.
We'll chop it if it's wrong. Host might be better.
See, Peter comes up. He's like, yeah, I got a table for one. And he's just immediately like insulting him. He's like, nobody else? Like, do you want me to get you a magazine? Like, you're going to be so bored.
I That's so funny. He has no consideration. It's through the floor. He does not care at all that he's just hurting this dude's feelings even
more. Just crushing him. So he goes to seat him. He's like, yeah, man, you got the best seat in the house. It's Aldous Snow right over there. He can't get away from Sarah Marshall and Aldous Snow at this point. They're sitting right over there. I believe they extend him an invitation. Doesn't happen.
Yeah, he's like, I need a drink. And that's one of the things, like, he's drinking a ton. He's just boozing the entire, because he can't get away from
it. Jonah Hill's character, I'm spacing his name. I don't remember the name of the character, but you keep seeing him dote on Aldous Snow. He is obsessed.
It's hilarious.
Snow.
Yeah, he's Matthew.
Matthew, I've never heard that name in the movie.
I don't think so either. He's Matthew the waiter in the credits.
So yeah, he's all upset, and I believe he goes to the bar right after that.
Yeah.
And that's where he meets the newlywed couple that he actually ran into when he was first checking into the hotel.
Right.
And the bartender, who,
oh my God,
is an interesting cat to say the least.
Yeah, he's played by a gentleman named Devon McDonald. His name is Dwayne the Bartender. So we have Dwayne the Bartender and Matthew the Waiter. And that guy,
I need to see more of that guy.
He's one of the funniest parts of the movie. He talks about how he can name off however many species of fish or whatever.
Like 300, and he just starts rattling off. Like, he says the word, the letter G. And yeah. He starts naming, like, gowler fish, grouper fish.
Dude, he also delivers one of the most quotable lines of the movie. If you can pronounce it,
hit
I guess.
Us with it.
It's the,
give it your best shot.
I'll try. Here we go.
He says, what's the state fish of Hawaii?
He goes, huma huma nuka apua ah. Yeah, bitch. That's the best I got, man. And that is actually the state fish of Hawaii. I'd love to see what that thing looks like, because I have no idea what the hell that even is.
I'm picturing this thing like 25 feet long for as many syllables.
I hope so, man. But yeah, it's a really cool sequence there. It's funny because, like, this bartender, like, slowly, I feel like he warms up to Peter over the movie. Like, at first he's just like, get this guy out of here. What are you doing, you idiot? And you just move on is what kind of he talks about in the bar. Mm-hmm. It's that easy. It's not hard. Move on. And
see, I lived in South Central and I hated it.
Now I live in Oahu.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really funny scene. And right shortly after this point, like, he kind of takes the advice. He tries to start doing something. I mean, he hasn't moved on in a relationship yet. There's moments there where it kind of looks like, you know, he's thinking about Rachel, like, maybe. But he doesn't really have the, I mean, he's been a blubbering mess since he's been there. There's been moments where she's called up to the room early on. Once he goes to his room for the first time, he's bawling his eyes out. She's like, there's been complaints of a woman crying around your room. Is there any? And he's like, yeah, I heard her too. And she goes, like,
I think it's coming from the floor above me.
Yeah, she's like, you're on the top floor, dude. It's really funny. And so he's not really in the mix yet to try to maybe move on in a relationship, but he decides he wants to surf.
He wants to
do something new and tackle a challenge. And so he goes to the beach the next day and he meets a guy who is another one of the highlights of this movie.
Casey Legend. For my money, he's the best part in the entire film. Kunu, played by Paul Rudd.
What does Kunu mean? It means Chuck. So you got Peter walks up to his little booth there on the beach, and then Chuck looks at him and he goes, like, there's pain behind those eyes. And it's funny because later on in the movie, we'll get to this, he greets him the same way again.
Right.
It's like he just does the same one-liner every single time someone comes up to the booth.
Yeah. He's smoking a little bit of the Islander a little bit.
That's what he even says. Like, there's one thing that make you feel better. What? Weed.
He's like, he's like, I'm going to give you an island name, buddy. He thinks about it for a second. He goes, P.O.B. P.O.B. looks like he got some pain behind those eyes. Yeah, and then he hits him with a line. Yeah, only thing to cure that, weed. You got any? No, let's go surfing.
When they paddle out, it is one of the funniest scenes of the film. They get out there and they go to the beach. And you got Kunu trying to show him how to stand up on the board. And he's like, do nothing. Do nothing. And he keeps trying to, no, you're doing too much. Do nothing. Do nothing. And he keeps trying, and Peter keeps failing, and then he just lays down.
Do nothing. And then he doesn't move.
Well, you gotta do more than that, man.
Yeah. And he pops up. He's, let's go surfing. The weather outside is weather. And to this day, every time my wife asks me, what's the temperature outside? What is this?
Wonderful.
I gotta hit her with that.
That's the best.
The classic line, man.
Yeah, they get out there, and there is a lot, like, one of the funniest lines in this movie is delivered. They're out there on the boards, and they're just kind of talking about life, and they have this really deep conversation about, you know, just, like, moving on, and, like, I don't know, just really, really, like, deep spiritual stuff, right? And then he goes, man, you know, when life, this is Paul Rudd, Kunu goes, man, when life gives you lemons, just say fuck the lemons and bail. I remember watching this movie back when this thing came out, and that line had me. I was laughing for days, man. All right, so a bit later, we arrive at the 4th of July, a little party they have going on at the resort, and there's another kind of nice moment there where you kind of start to see like the budding relationship that could be between Peter and Rachel. At the, you know, he's kind of angry. What you doing here? You work in? She's like, yeah, this is the whole 4th of July thing. And he goes into the party, Peter does. And it's not very long before just this, there's a band playing and all this. Jonah Hill, as you know, Rick, you mentioned, is obsessed with Aldous Snow. And he goes up on stage and kind of just makes the pitch like, hey, so we're lucky enough to have Aldous Snow here in the audience today. Maybe we can get him to come up and play a song and sing for us. And he obliges. And when he gets up there, he sings a song by his band Infant Sorrow.
Entitled, Inside of You.
And it's like full-on motions on the stage, too. Like this,
he's dry hump in the air and... Inside of you, the restless find their dreams, and you know, of course, Jonah Hill. He's, you know, going from 6 to midnight, and it's just another example of Peter cannot get away
right
from Sarah Marshall and Aldous Snow.
And this insinuation, it's like right in his face. This everything that Aldous seems to do rubs Peter's nose in the fact that he's engaging sexually with his ex-girlfriend every single time that he runs into them. He's doing something that's just like, really? He's out of control. And that song, he did, you know, after listening to this, he's had his fill. So he bails, right? He leaves the party and he walks down to the beach where he runs into what might, you know, if you're not paying attention, could fly under the radar. A really great performance. Kimo, who is, he was at the bar. Was he at the bar
earlier? He was at the buffet earlier on in the film.
Right.
That he visits.
And they talk a little bit about moving on. And, you know, because he can tell that it's funny. Like he mentions like, oh, you're Sarah Marshall. Sorry about that or whatever. And Peter asks, how did you know? Because he hasn't really talked to Kimo about anything except breakfast. And he's like, Rachel told me. And he goes through this whole list of folks at the resort who have told him. He's like, you gotta stop talking about this, man. Like, this is bad. Everyone knows your business here. And he gives a very interesting point of view on how to move on from Sarah Marshall. He says that it's like The Sopranos. It's over.
Find a new show.
And last week we talked to Scott talked about The Sopranos, and that's his jam. And we're gonna have to get his two cents on that when he gets when he gets back to the mic next week, hopefully. So,
in that same scene, he asks him, you know, we need to go get a pig for the luau that night. Do you want to help me? And it's a crushing scene if you feel anything towards animals, because they go catch a pig, and Peter's like. He's got a knife in his hands, and they're holding the pig down. He's like, I don't want to do it.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. And he starts stabbing the pig, and the pig's squealing, and I'm sorry.
But it's juxtaposed with Peter being like, I'm a pretty good cook. Yeah, it's really, like, super, you know, he starts to feel good about himself. He's excited. And then it just, this crazy POV camera flying around this pig getting ganked by this giant buck knife. Dude, it is ridiculous. It's so funny and so disturbing at the same time. His reaction was so... Oh,
carries him off and he's like, why are you being such a baby?
He's already dead.
You look like a gigantic baby. So the next scene cuts to the luau that night And of course, Rachel is at the beginning,
right?
You know, ushering the guests in. And Peter finally gets the courage to ask her out, you know, would you like to hang out later? And Rachel mentions they got something going down on at the beach later that night.
Right.
You know, it's kind of a popular hangout, you know, would you like to? And yeah, of course.
Right.
And so they, you know, it cuts to that and they're
kind of really cool. Like I just want to say, like, he says, I'd love to. And I thought that was really cool. That's the moment where he's like, you know what? Cut through all the awkwardness, because everybody knows, like, in relationships, mm-hmm. there's always that, like, I mean, I don't have to. I mean, it doesn't have to be. And then
you don't
just
know
saying,
the
you know what?
Real intentions of the other person, yeah.
Right. And then just saying, you know what, cut through the bullshit and just say, yes, mm-hmm. I would love to go. And that was really kind of cool, you know, because she's such a refreshing breath of fresh air from what he's been dealing with Sarah. Like, she's so down to earth, and she's like, don't make this awkward. Do you want to go or not?
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I would love to. And that's exactly what he needed. You know, we're talking about, like, Valentine's Day, man. That's where really, like, this love story kind of starts. Because I was watching this with Tristan, and she's like, my fiance, and she's like, I thought this was a love story. This is Valentine's Day. This whole time he's just weeping, and there's pigs dying, and this is not the movie. But this is the moment where you start to see, like, yeah, that he can move on. And that's really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're on the beach, and Peter's kind of getting to know her a little bit more, and he kind of asks her, you know, what are your intentions as far as your future? And, you know, have you thought about going to school, this and that? And she says, well, you know, I kind of got the, you know, I got the job at the hotel. There doesn't really have to be a future in that. And so she kind of flips it on him. Like, what are you like? Do you like your job? Do you like the composer job? And she can tell right off the bat that he doesn't care for it. And he ends up telling her about his kind of passion project, which is the Dracula musical.
Oh, it's so good.
Which is actually a Jason Segel in real life actually had this as a project. He was real tight with Judd Apatow, and he had took this over to his house. He burned it onto a CD. I don't know if it was the specific song that was played later.
It's 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So we got burnt CDs.
Yeah, it's been a minute. He plays it for Judd Apatow, and Judd Apatow tells him, this should never be played for anybody. But, yeah, this was real. Anyway, they go along a little bit further in the story, and he asks kind of like why she moved here, and she said because of a boy, and, you know, he treated me wrong and all this, and the ex-boyfriend actually shows up on the beach.
This dude is not – well, he behaves like a boy, but this dude is stacked.
Oh, like, he's solid. he's built.
And yeah, he rolls up and
hyper aggressive.
Immediately, Rachel leaps to her feet. She says, if I run, you run. And Siegel's like, what do you mean? And she jumps up to her feet and she goes over and starts screaming at this guy, giving him all what for. Just like, what are you doing on my island? I told you to stay on your island. And man, like an all out brawl breaks out, man.
And Kino? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Kimo.
Kimo comes in. Bitch slaps him.
Just flat out, man.
Yeah, they get the hell out of Dodge. They go to a local bar, and
this is one of the coolest romantic scenes of the movie. Like, what she does for him and what he lets his guard down. I mean, the first time he's poking fun at her, you went crazy out there, mm-hmm. you know. I love that, and she does something for him that we'll get to here in a little bit, that he's out of his comfort zone, and it shows that she cares a lot about him and what he's all about. But there's a bathroom in the bar, and all over this bathroom wall, we've got photographs of women flashing their bare breasts at the camera. And you learn that, you know, as Peter's, you know, using the urinal there, he sees Rachel in one of the photographs.
She's on the wall.
And he's just kind of like, oh, that's interesting. Goes back out and he asks her about it. And he says, hey, did you know you're on the wall in there in the pisser? Like, you know, flashing the camera. And she says, yeah. And like her ex-boyfriend, you know, he sort of
forced her into it.
Yeah. Made her feel like she had to do it. And the bartender is very protective of his collage of flash photos. And says, no, you can't take it down. Because, you know, Peter's like, hey, I'll go pull it off the wall if you want me to.
Yeah.
And she says, no, 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 he'll kill you. he'll literally kill you.
He'll actually kill you. He's a certified dirtbag.
Yes.
So she basically springs it on him. I have a bit of a surprise for you. There's a live band in this bar, right? And they have been playing music this whole time. And right on cue, the person at the bar, right. The person at the band basically says, you know, we have a special performance for you tonight. Everybody welcome Peter Bredder up here. And he's giving her the stare down. And do they make mention that he's going to perform the Dracula musical, I believe?
Yes, a song from his Dracula musical.
And of course he thinks, this is not going to go well.
It's all out of context.
Correct. In the middle of Hawaii. And so, yeah, she's cheering him on. He finally gets up there and he's rolling his eyes and he eventually performs the song. It's actually genius.
It's great, man.
I love the song.
Yeah, I mean, he says things like, what? Blood will run down his face when he's decapitated. And like, the line, which is actually really, like, he's talking, like, he says, like,
die. Die. Die.
I can't. It's like, oh, man, this guy just, like, wants some freedom from what he's, like, lived, and he can't get it.
So I believe what happens the next day is it cuts to Sarah Marshall and she's on the phone and it's her publicist.
Ooh.
And she gets the news that her show, Crime Scene, Scene of the Crime, has been canceled, which also means Peter Rutter's job has been canceled.
Right.
And so she goes and tells Aldis this, and he doesn't seem all that concerned with the news. He's telling her, you know what you should do? You should come on tour with me. Basically disregard your career and come on with me. And he tells her, you can be the queen of the groupies. You can be the queen of the sorrow suckers. She goes, the sorrow suckers? I don't know why they call them that.
You know, shortly after the news breaks, Peter's at the bar and he runs into Sarah, who's, because she sort of starts to get turned off to the idea, you know, of what Aldis is doing. He doesn't care about her, and she's really starting to see that. And she's alone at a table at the bar drinking, and here comes Peter. He goes down to the bar, yada yada. He sees her over there, and he goes over and, hey, you doing okay? And she mentions, hey, yeah, the show's been canceled. He's like, holy shit, this is crazy. And she talks about how it's gonna be okay, and he goes, like, look, just drop the act, like, just be real. Right now, this is not The View, I think is what he says.
Yeah.
And she goes, okay, I'm freaked out. And she, of course, you know, she's scared that she's going to become irrelevant. And she talks to, you know, Peter about it. And Peter goes, how do you feel? And he goes, I'm screwed. Like, I got nowhere to go. But it kind of fits the, like, I feel like he sort of felt like that since he got there. Like, he's just like, my life's over. So it's kind of like par for the course. But you find a moment there where you see Sarah grab his hand. And he's made her feel better. He makes her laugh.
Yeah.
In her moment of, like,
he cracks
stress.
A joke about, oh, I'll be okay. I've been quietly stealing money from you.
There you go.
Years.
Yes, so. Exactly. And so that there's still something there for Sarah. And of course, you know, I mean, that Peter's been trying to get over her. So there's a newly introduced potential hurdle here.
So Peter is walking by kind of the receptionist desk. He runs into Rachel. And they're kind of discussing plans for the end of the day. She says, hey, you want to come do this with me? And he says, I'm kind of thinking about going to take a hike. And she's like, well, yeah, it's a lot of work, but sure, I'll go with you. And they eventually get to this point at the edge of this cliff. And that's when it kind of starts to get real. She's trying to persuade him, you know, maybe because he tells her the news of the show being canceled. And
right.
She's like, well, maybe, I think you should finish your Dracula musical. She kind of, you know, kind of pushing him in the right direction, giving him encouragement, something that he never had with Sarah. Sarah was never on board.
Or Judd Apatow, for that matter.
Or Judd Apatow.
Hell with that guy.
Hey, buddy.
Forgetting Judd Apatow.
So there's a, to steal a line from Always Sunny, there's a bit of a charged moment there. And right when he's going in for a kiss, she jumps off the cliff and he's freaking out. Eventually he jumps. I'll probably include that there's water at the end of the cliff.
All right.
Yes, they jump. They jump into the water. Yeah. You know, he's like, so he eventually jumps into, he's like, oh, that was crazy. And they finally kiss.
Right. It's a really great moment. Like, cause she taunts him a little bit from the water.
She does.
She pokes him and she's this, like, she's this down to earth, kind of like, she is an anchor for all this, like, emotion he has. And, I mean, you can tell, like, he's kind of becoming more and more nuts about this chick because she's always there to make him feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Whether she's at work or whatever, it doesn't matter. Every time he sees her, it's just like, oh, well, she gave him the room. She's, you know, she's always been there. And, man, it's funny because, like, he probably does what I would do if I tried to jump off a rock. Do I jump here? And he like slips and falls. And he's grabbing onto the greenery there on the side of the rock. And he's, what do I do? And she's like, don't drop. He's like, I'll just let go. No, you're going to break your neck and die or whatever. And so anyway, yeah, to your point, he leaps off and that's.
It's kind of like a sim. Yes, there's a little bit of symbolism there.
He jumps.
You know, I'm finally going to take that jump off.
He jumps. Yeah. Really cool. So and everybody's like cheering because even though this is a goofy comedy, it's like, yeah, you know, you want these two to be together. Yeah. It's just they're sort of perfect for one another. And she loves his Dracula musical, man.
Right.
Nobody else does. You gotta, yes.
You can clearly see that he has been wronged by Sarah Marshall.
Well, there's some montage, like quick montages too. Like you see, like between Sarah and him. He sees where he, like, and I don't remember what the cue was for this, but like, he's holding her purse. Or he's off in the background. Like, he doesn't really exist as her partner. He's just sort of there.
Right.
Like, she's getting photographed at one of her premieres or whatever, and they're like, hey, Andre the Giant, out of the photo. He has, like, he's just in the back, like, trying to, like, hold her stuff. And then another, like, later on, we see another montage where Sarah Marshall starts to see some, where Alda starts to become a little bit less of an attraction for her, because the things that Peter did do, she's starting to notice that he just doesn't care.
Correct. So I believe the next morning, Chemo, he comes into the room of Peter Brutter and informs him that Dakota Fanning has booked the Kapua Suite. So being that he's off the books and this celebrity has booked the suite, he has to move rooms. And where does he move?
Well, unfortunately, this resort seems to have some sort of weird magnetism for awful, and it puts him right next to Sarah Marshall in her room. He does have one killer line there where there's a bunch of used tissues all over the bed, and Chemo looks right at Peter and goes, oh, are those happy tissues or sad tissues?
So his trip is winding down the following day. He really wants to ride that wave.
He does.
Riding that wave. So he gets back out on that water. And that is when I believe Keanu hits him with that same line. Yeah, you look like you got some pain behind your eyes. He says, save it, Keanu. I want to ride waves. So he gets out.
You're ready. That's a great moment.
Yeah. He's like, I don't think you're ready. And he's like, trust me, I'm ready. And he goes, yeah, I think you're ready. So he's floating out on that water. And who does he see out there, Steve?
He runs into the guy he's been running into for the past like 3 days, our Russell Brand. And it's actually like Russell Brand, he talks about, you know, they have a conversation where Peter's like, he starts to sort of like relate or not relate, but connect.
Yeah. He's telling him, yeah, I loved your music, man.
Yeah. It's like
Neil Diamond.
Neil Diamond, yes. And that's exactly what I was going for. And he finds that connection with the guy that he would least want to have a connection with. And everything seems to maybe, you know, maybe we can move forward, maybe. And then all of a sudden, he goes like, man, I had 4 years or 5 years with Sarah Marshall.
5 years.
5 years. And he goes, yeah, I only had one or whatever. It's four more than me, mate.
Yeah.
And he goes, wait, what?
So the big revelation that Sarah Marshall has been sleeping with Aldous the entire last year they were together.
And it's just, what's really kind of funny about the scene is like, it's, that would result in a fist fight in 9 out of 10 movies. But in this one, Jason Segel just starts splashing his ass. He just starts throwing water. You don't do that, man. You don't do that, man. We have rules here. This isn't Europe, is what he says. There's a moment where maybe you feel like, you know, old Russell Brand shows some remorse or whatever. I'm sorry. I hope this doesn't affect our friendship. He paddles off, and this is where Peter says, all right, he notices that the wave is kind of coming up to crest behind him, and he goes, all right, I want to ride this wave. And it's his moment. He hops up on his board, and he rides the wave. And in a hilarious turn, he's riding the wave, and he rides the board. He looks right there in front of him, and there is Elvis. He runs his board right into his dome, and he knocks him off his board. It's a hilarious sequence where it flips the whole thing over, and it's funny again. From there, he wheels him up on the beach.
He gets a piece of coral in his leg, right? And Peter's freaking out. Kunu's right next to him. He's like giving lessons to somebody else. He's like, Kunu, get the ambulance. And Kunu's like, yeah. And then he doesn't move. He doesn't do anything. And Kunu, come on. He's like, all right, I'll go do it. And then he runs off. And eventually Aldous is like, dude, he's not going to do anything. You got to get that coral out of my leg. And Peter, I guess, has a thing for blood. He does not like blood.
Right.
And so, you know, he's... Eventually he agrees to pull it out. He gives a little bit of a countdown, pulls it out. Blood starts running from his leg. Peter immediately passes out. and Aldous is losing blood. Kunu eventually comes back. And Kunu, you sound like you're from London.
Rick, to your point, Peter does not deal with blood well, passes out, wakes up. Who else would be by his bedside to wake up to? It's Miss Sarah Marshall.
Sarah Marshall.
And she's talking about, I didn't want you to wake up alone and this, that, and the other. And, you know, we go through a little exchange here. Fortunately for our boy Peter, he has not forgotten what happened out there on the water. And he's like, look, you know, it's this funny thing I heard. It's a gas or whatever. And he just calls her out. You guys were sleeping together for a year while we were together. And she's like, oh no, like, oh God. And this is huge, like, blow up. And I feel like this is the moment where, like, Peter can move on, right? Like, there's that moment there where he separates here. You know, we get into some stuff later where, like, there's a moment of question, but where he might have had a foot in the water. It's like, I didn't just get dumped for this guy.
Right.
I was being cheated on for a year.
I was overlapped.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, and he, in that same scene, he eventually asked her, you know, why? Why did you do that?
Yeah.
And more or less, she basically tells him that he was kind of lazy and unmotivated, you know?
Which is actually really, you know, her scene here was really good. Like, yeah. There's a moment, like when I said tug of war earlier in the cast, like, I felt like you can't really forgive a year of just banging somebody behind your partner's back.
It's hard to write that off.
But there are moments where you see Sarah Marshall and you're like, okay, well, maybe he was sort of, she's got points. And I do appreciate that. It kind of creates this little, like, tug of war in your heart as an audience member. You're still on Peter's side, but you're like, okay, right. Well, you know, was he trying? Did he care? We don't know. We didn't get that glimpse. We just saw him flapping his dong between his legs at the beginning of the movie. We don't know what was happening for the whole 6 year or whatever relationship.
He eventually says a line that says, you know, I don't think that you tried that hard, or excuse me, he says, I don't think that I've tried very hard. Maybe you could have tried to be a little bit better too. And she says, you have no idea how hard I tried. I tried, you know, love seminars. I tried sex seminars. None of it mattered to you, and I couldn't drown with you anymore. And, you know, that's a pretty heavy scene. And to your point, not that you're switching sides, but right. You know, if you're with somebody that has no drive, has no motivation from her perspective.
I mean, she went about it in the worst way.
In the very worst way.
But you do, in that moment, you get a glimpse of kind of like, all right, well, maybe our boy wasn't doing his part. Maybe he wasn't, you know. But that being said, you still did something that is extremely hurtful. And
you don't do it.
You don't do it, man. So we have this confrontational scene where, you know, Peter has to look at himself in the mirror. Once he does, he walks off to face himself, and he's sleeping next door. So there's nowhere to escape. He just walks out the back door of Sarah Marshall's apartment where he woke up, or to her hotel room where he woke up, and then walks next door to his hotel room and goes to reflect. But then we enter into, shortly after this, into what is personally, I think, my favorite scene of the movie. What Russell Brand does in this sequence is hilarious. So there is a dinner sequence where we have the two couples, we got Peter and Rachel, and we got Sarah and Aldis, and they both are going to the same restaurant. Believe it or not, after all these coincidences,
no way.
They match up again. And
it's
so
gotta be the only restaurant it's gotta on
be.
The island.
It's gotta be. So they arrive at the restaurant, and they're at the host desk at the same time. And it's very awkward.
Jonah Hill's freaking out because
I didn't have a table ready for you.
Yeah, you gotta wait 5 minutes. I'm so sorry. He's like, it's all right, dude.
And right before this, we do get a sequence. I guess we should mention real quickly about the Tommy Bahama shirt. We have a sequence where Sarah Marshall bought a shirt for Aldis, and it's a Tommy Bahama shirt, and she wants him to wear it, and he's trying to wear the see-through like drapes. This weird shirt, and he's like, this is appropriate for tonight. And he looks at her, and she's sad. She's had that reflection we were talking about earlier, where Peter he championed everything that Sarah did, and she's missing that.
She bought him like a satchel, and he's so proud of it.
Yeah,
some like Bond Dutch trucker hat. Yeah. And the bartender's giving him shit about it.
Oh my
in the flashback.
God, it's so funny. Anyway, this was one moment where like Aldis actually caved, and he wears the Tommy Bahama shirt. And that's a big staple in this sequence, by the way. Like, he wears the shirt, he walks up, and he's bitching about it the whole time on the way up to the restaurant. They run into each other. Like you were saying, Rick, like, Jonah Hill's freaking out. He doesn't have a table ready. You gotta wait 5 minutes. It's fine, no worries. And Peter said, like, there's a table ready for them. And they're getting ready to go. It's like, oh, it's good seeing you. You can join us if you want to, or whatever. He just says it almost reflex.
Yeah.
And Sarah Marshall, who is missing Peter, goes, we'll do it. Mm-hmm. And now we have this incredibly awkward dinner sequence, which is out of this world funny. And they both wind up at the same table. And from there, it just goes off the rails.
So they begin drinking.
So many bottles of wine.
So many bottles of wine. And Aldis has made it known at this point, throughout the entire film, he does not drink.
Right.
He's 7 years sober, I believe. He has the tattoos on his neck. He starts cracking into the bottle of wine, does he not?
Mm.
Or does he start drinking regular juice?
I think he gets cranberry cocktail. Well, because Jonah Hill's like, he's like, can I get a cranberry juice? He goes, you want cranberry or cranberry cocktail? I got both. I don't know. It's like, I don't care.
He's so fed up with that character at this point. I don't care. So, yeah, they're drinking, and they eventually... Somehow the subject gets around to a movie that Sarah Marshall had done.
It's great.
And she starts talking about it, and Peter and Aldis both start ragging on it. It's about a film about how your mobile phone can kill you.
Mobile phone?
What would happen? Mobile phone commit murders? That sounds... How would that ever happen?
And it's funny because, like, throughout this scene, you've got Rachel trying to give Sarah Marshall the benefit of the doubt. Oh, I get that. It's a metaphor for technology taking over our lives and all this stuff.
Yeah, they're trying to get along, and they're then, trying. Aldis comes in. It's a metaphor for a crap movie.
Oh, my God. What's really actually super funny about this is they're making fun of this movie. Kristen Bell was in Pulse in 2006. And it's about kind of that same stuff, and it's hilarious.
It's a direct shot. And so you can feel the tenseness building and building and building, and I believe at one point in the dinner they serve dessert and there's chocolate cake, and Rachel ends up feeding it to Peter, which immediately makes Sarah jealous.
Well, don't they like right before the cake comes, don't they start firing shots over the bow a little bit? Like, Sarah Marshall starts to see that he's happy with her, mm-hmm. and goes like, oh, Hawaii's nice, and maybe for like 4 or 5 days, this, that, and the other. It's just too. And then you got Rachel, who's living here. It's like, oh, there's just a lack of all these like dog walkers and all this, and they're sort of like duking it out here. And that when that cake comes, she like lays it down.
Yeah, they start bashing heads, and of course, as we've been saying, their rooms are right next to each other.
Oh, this is the scene.
Wall
dude.
To wall. So they both go back, and then they start getting intimate. They start having sex. They're all drunk. Rachel's getting into it, of course, and so is Peter. Of course, they know who is on the other side of the wall. Sarah and Aldis are getting into it. And Sarah, being very jealous at this point, starts faking it.
Loudly.
Very loudly.
One of the funniest things in this movie, and I've said that like 50 times because this movie is an incredibly funny comedy, but the look on Russell Brand's face when she's faking, he's offended, he's confused, he's upset.
She's just all out screams, yeah, oh!
The best sex I ever had! And like, he's looking at her like, what are you doing? It's incredible.
So, you know, shortly after he throws her off, he realizes what had happened. He's, as Steven pointed out, barely offended. They have a bit of a fight. They're coming to blows, and she says, you know, I hate your music. And he says, well, I fucked the housekeeper.
Tattoos suck.
Hey, your tattoos are bullshit because you have a cross and, a, you know, a Hindu sign and this and that. And it doesn't make you a servant of the world. It makes you full of shit.
Full of shit.
And by the end of it, he makes it clear that he's leaving in the morning. And that's when we see that relationship basically fall apart.
Right. Which was always, honestly, just on thin ice when you think about, like, who Russell Brand's character was. You know, Sarah Marshall was never really, she just wanted something different. And what happens next in this movie, which it's heartbreaking almost for both parties. Like, and that's really something, it's like a bitter pill. Because, I don't want to fast forward too much, but, you know, we get to the next day or so, and you know, Aldous is ready to just jet.
Mm-hmm.
And does he actually visit him in the airport or at
Peter
the lobby?
Peter sees him at the lobby.
Hotel yep. lobby. And he goes, like, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, you know, this is it, man. I'm leaving. And he goes, oh, you and Sarah are leaving? He goes, no, just me. He's going back to England. He's going to do his tour. And that's, I mean, that's it for all Russell Brand.
Mm-hmm.
He jets.
So he's out of there. And Peter,
the girl gets out, the driver gets out of the limousine, and he's like, I'm going to have sex with her. And that's it. That's the last thing you hear him say.
I mean, you knew it was doomed from the start. Just very much a free spirit that, you know, he makes mention of it at the dinner where he basically believes.
Oh, my God. That's a what? I have the right to have sex with anybody right. I want to.
Right. Lose yourself in fuck is what he. And she's, oh, he's being sarcastic. No, I really believe that.
Oh, my God.
So, yes, he leaves. Of course, Peter goes and tries to console Sarah Marshall. And that is where things take a bit of a hairy turn.
Yeah, man, this is the bummer because you know, Peter goes to Sarah Marshall's room, right, which is really inadvisable at this point, especially like it's hard to explain why you would do this as somebody who's trying to move on, but he's trying to be a good guy and he goes back to her room and she's upset and because he had seen, you know, all this leaving and he goes back to check on her and he starts talking, they start talking about things and like how she's not over him and it snowballs very quickly and she kisses him and he kisses her back and in a moment that's just like, everybody watching, it's like, what are you doing? But, you know, everybody that's been there before is like, okay, well, this guy's not fully healed and mm-hmm. and she's not either.
This is what he wanted for half of the film.
Right. He was weeping on the floor, you know, and her too. If you really want to, I mean, if we did a Forgetting Peter Brenner film, like we would say that, you know, who knows what we would have seen on her end. She kisses him, he kisses her back, and she's like, I've missed you, I've missed you, I've missed you. And they're going to move it on to something a little more physical, and he's not able to execute. Failure to launch.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, what's wrong? It's like, I don't know. I don't know. And then she's like, oh. He's kind of like, in a weird moment, he's like, stop talking. Like, stop saying things. Like, I just need to, you know, I don't want to hear you. And you realize, really, as an audience member, like, he does not love her, mm-hmm. and this is not right. This is not what he should be doing, or her for that matter. They just need to heal and move on. But she still presses onward to try to just numb the pain, I guess, of her current boyfriend leaving. And Sarah, using all methods at her disposal,
engaging in fellatio.
And it doesn't work. And there's a moment, like, this is really, I was telling, you know, Tristan earlier, it's kind of really dark. Like, he goes, maybe it's because you broke my heart into a million pieces and my dick wants nothing to do with you anymore. And he calls her the devil and leaves the room. And that is the last time we see Sarah Marshall outside of the post-credit scene, which is not really, you know, she's not our friend as an audience member if you're on Peter's side. She's kind of the thing that ruined his life. But, you know, if you sort of step back objectively, like, that's a really sad ending for a relationship. Not just like a romantic relationship, but you're the devil and then you leave. But that's how it ends, man. He leaves and he does what he should do. He immediately goes to the front desk and he says, "Hey, Rachel, girl that I really want to have a relationship with, here's what happened." And rightfully so, she's not too happy with the news, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I got to give props to him. I mean, he did not have to do that.
Right.
But as a man, he went in and confessed. And of course, she was not happy with it. And she asked, you know, he basically says, you know, "We did things." And she says, "What things?" And
right.
The more and more he gets into it.
Dude, her eyes in that, like, she's just waiting. She knows the bomb's going to drop. It's so good. The hurt in her eyes that she's, like, prepping for this. She does a great job in this sequence.
I agree. So he dives a little bit into what actually happened, and she tells him, "I need you to leave. Do not call me. Do not text me. I need you to stop communicating with me." And he says, you know, of course he's heartbroken, but he says, "I won't have anything to do with you anymore. I'll leave you alone." And the next scene is him going back to that bar that they were at
the
first night and getting that damn picture of her topless off the wall. And the owner comes in there and basically says, put the picture back, brother. Put the picture back.
And he goes.
And he gets his ass whipped. But
you can hit me as many times as you want. I'm not giving you that picture. Mm-hmm. He's willing to give it all for this girl. And that's what you want. He delivers it. He hand delivers it to her, right? Goes back to the desk. Bah! Puts that picture down.
And lumps
all over his mug, man. He's been beat to hell. But and she sees it and she knows. Because she was the one that said he's going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes home.
It's a rough scene. But yeah, he goes home. And he sings my favorite part in the movie. He sings the song, "Peter, You Suck." "Peter, You Suck. Peter, You Don't Do Anything of Value."
"Go to a therapist."
"I'm not going." At the end of the song, he's all stressed out. You see him rough. And then, you know, he starts getting his stuff together. And he starts working again on that Dracula musical. He starts pulling himself together.
Right.
He gets on the treadmill. You know, he's eating a nutritious breakfast. He's getting his life back together.
He's hanging out with Bill Hader and his wife.
I forgot. Correct. And you cut back to Rachel, and she's going through her mail, and there's, you know, an off-colored envelope.
Right.
And it's an invitation from Peter to come see his musical. The Dracula musical.
He got it done, baby. He got it done.
He got it done. And she's, you know, you can tell she's kind of at odds with it. And she goes and talks to Chemo and the bartender. And
he lays it down. What he says is, "Hey, look, the dude screwed up. He did a shitty thing." But
he's like Gandhi. But better. He likes puppets.
He likes puppets, baby. Such a good character. Underrated character in this movie, for sure.
Pound for pound, he might be the best character in there. Because he didn't get that much screen time. He's hilarious.
Bangers all the way through.
So, yeah, it cuts back to Peter, and he's in the show. He's completed the Dracula musical. He's putting on the show.
Dude, and how incredible was the show?
It's awesome.
Maybe second to The Nightman Cometh? Like...
"Here I am in my dungeon."
Bill Hader's in it too. I love that. He's playing like, was he Van Helsinger? I don't know who he was exactly. But
So yeah, he's going on about the play. And, you know, he's looking around the crowd. And who is in the crowd, Steven?
Oh, man, just the way we needed it. There she is. It's Rachel. Miss Mila Kunis is sitting in the crowd. And she gives him this smile that would melt all the snow on the road right now. Funny movie, but a really, really heartwarming moment when he sees her in the crowd and he just smiles on stage like he's doing what he loves. She was the only one. Just the only reason he did that play was because she put him on stage back at the bar. I believe that. I thought that was one of the coolest moments. So.
This goofy Dracula musical was the thing that brought them back together.
And so, yeah, after the show, you know, he's going around doing the meet and greet and all that. And of course, he sees her there and he's talking and he basically says, you know, what are you doing in town? And she says, I'm checking out some schools. So she's finally trying to
open ended. I might not go home.
Correct.
Yeah. A little asterisk on that.
Mm-hmm. He says, you know, can I see you later? Oh, yeah, of course.
Right.
And she says, go back and enjoy your company. And so he's going around, you know, getting his congratulations and thank yous. And she's on the street. And I think she's getting a call from him or something out in the middle of the road. He goes back to his dressing room.
He goes back to take off the unitard because it's chafing him.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes to her car and she looks at her phone and she's thinking about it. She goes, no. I'm not leaving. And she goes back to the dressing room. And it wouldn't be forgetting Sarah Marshall if Jason Segel didn't hang Dong one more time.
You got to finish it out with the Segel Dong.
Right. And there it is. You know, just she comes in the room. He's got his unitard off. She's like, hey, Peter, and pokes in the door. And there he is. And if it wasn't just like Dong and Dong in cap, because she walks up and she's laughing at him. And, you know, nobody wants to be, I don't care who you are. You don't want to be laughed at when you're naked. And she's like, will you stop laughing, please? And she's like, I'm sorry. But it's just the shock. And she walks up and she kisses him. It's just this hilarious but heartwarming moment. And really the only way to finish this movie.
It's the only way. And, you know, they kiss and the camera pans a little bit to the side. And it's his puppets. It's Dracula.
Yeah.
And his new lady.
That's right.
Roll credits, the end.
And man, I mean, what a, and then they close out as the credits roll with, I don't know who was singing it, but Inside You by somebody was.
It's actually.
Is that Russell Brand?
So in the, I won't call it a follow up because in Get Him to the Greek, which I believe came out 2 years after that,
okay.
Russell Brand plays the same character.
Right, right, right.
But Jonah Hill is also in the movie and he plays a different character.
Right.
But Russell Brand, I mean, you can look it up on Spotify. If you search Infant Sorrow, there's a soundtrack to that movie. He is singing all of those songs.
That sounded like a totally different person.
He is incredible.
Wow.
He has a real voice. If he wanted to do a real soundtrack, he very well could have.
I thought that was somebody else covering that just for the sake of it being in the credits. How neat is that?
That is 100%
him. You know, and what a weird song. What a weird name for a band. But it's the perfect bow on this movie, man. And I think, you know, you pitched this idea. It's a great idea. I'm hats off to you. I think the winner of the vote gets the right to sort of rapid fire lightning round some questions at the losers of the poll pick, if you will. We have to answer these tough questions that are curated by the winner of the poll pick. And I believe that Rick has scared up a nice bundle of questions for your boy tonight. And I'll let him take over from here because this is his throne tonight.
So, as I previously mentioned, we wanted to finish off this episode with something a little different to keep with the theme of Valentine's Day, right? So, now Valentine's Day can be a bit of a divisive day, right? Depending on who you ask. For the most part, you either have people on one side or the other. You either love it because it gives you an opportunity to, you know, kind of shower your loved ones with a little bit of extra love, or right. Maybe you're getting taken care of on that day.
Right.
And, you know, you really appreciate the day. Or you probably hate it for a number of reasons. Maybe you don't have a special person in your life to share the day with, or it can be a painful reminder of somebody that you used to have in your life.
Right. For sure. Sarah Marshall.
There you go. Maybe you believe you shouldn't need a specific day to share your loved one a little bit, that they mean a little bit extra to you. Or maybe you just hate it because you think it's a reason for blatant consumerism.
Oh.
So you catch my drift. Either you love it or either you love it or you hate it. So here's how this is going to go. Stephen, I'm going to give you a topic. Now, it can range from an actor, a movie, a genre, anything.
I'm scared to death.
Anything in the cinema. Okay. And it's going to be at random.
Okay, hit me.
So, are you ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
Now, what's going to happen? You're going to give me a love or a hate. Now, I know you. You're a gentle soul here. You're strong to love. Now, not so much hate. So, if you don't want to give me a hate, you can give me, a gentle dislike, maybe.
Okay, all
so,
right.
So, I'm going to give you a softball to start off with here.
Let me have
Here's the first one.
All right.
Love or hate Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Love.
You love him?
Oh, yeah.
And also, I forgot to mention, you can give me, if you want to, you can give me a quick answer.
A
quick answer why.
He's one of the all-American heroes, man. He's an incredible image of what it, takes to climb the ranks. He's a wonderful action hero. What a guy. You talk about what he's done in his life. He's achieved more than most of us will achieve. What he achieved in like 5 years, it would take most of us 5 lifetimes to achieve. What a great man. Yes. Love Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I couldn't agree more. A really quick follow-up on that. Love or hate Arnold's pizza shop?
Love, just from like a nostalgia standpoint. Bullets and pepperoni.
The bullets and pepperoni.
You come to the right place. Yeah. The only thing that I hate about that is, like, he mentions pineapple
as a trash topping.
I love pineapple on pizza, and I'll be one of the wild ones. I might have something in common here with my boy.
I couldn't agree more. Depending on where you get it from, you get a nice solid Hawaiian pizza.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Why wouldn't you have a Hawaiian pizza when we talk about Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
I agree.
Set in Hawaii.
There's never a better Wonderful. Time to try one than now. And Enjoy I would recommend some... Casey's Pizza. We're getting way off the rails here.
Let's do it.
We're going to move on to the next one. Now, this was more geared to our other co-host, Scott, here. But love or hate Will Ferrell?
I love him. I think he was an incredible staple on SNL. He's a great comedic force, whether it's behind the pen or behind the microphone or behind he's very, very good. And I think that comedy's better to have for having him in it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I was definitely looking forward to hearing the hateful rant that
I Mr. can't understand. Scott was you don't have to love all of his roles. Like, I mean, he is a little bit of a goofball and some of his stuff doesn't land. But to be honest with you, I don't think you can't really take away from what he's contributed to the genre.
Okay. Love or hate musicals?
Ugh. Oh, well, boy. As a whole, I don't hate them. It's not my jam. Okay. I do think that they are a very important piece of artwork. It's an art form that's extremely important to the collective. But it's not my speed.
Love or hate M. Night Shyamalan?
I don't hate him. I think he has done some things for the genre. The twist. Like, people, you say that word and you instantly think of him. His movies are hit and miss. I don't love everything he's done.
I agree on that.
I hate to be lukewarm on this, but it's just one of those things that you can't say that he didn't change the game when it comes to not horror, but not just horror, but thrillers and the suspenseful movies that he knows how to twist things around for better or for worse. I like him. How's that?
You can love him for movies like The Sixth Sense and
Signs.
Possibly Split, Signs.
Yeah.
And you can also hate him like I do for The Happening. Love or hate talking during a movie?
Hate. No explanation required.
I figured. Love or hate Jared Leto's Joker?
Hate. I hate. I mean, I think this is one where Scott and I would line up. I do not think it's really that great.
This one may or may not have been geared towards you. Love or hate Matthew McConaughey?
Love him all day long, baby. What he does, everything from Dazed and Confused all the way to True Detective, I mentioned last week, Interstellar, Mud. I think he's a very, very, very cool actor, and I love his persona. He's an outstanding actor, and what a great human, too. I read his book, Green Lights,
I'm
baby.
I'm staring at the book right now. Love or hate live-action Disney remakes?
Oh, I don't. I'm not a fan. I think that it's just a cash grab. Lion King, I'll start and finish there because this is it's a lightning round. That was the first movie I saw in theaters, and I understand that movie. There's no reason to go tread back.
There's been a couple that I like, from Lion King specifically. I've heard that it was basically like National Geographic, and they just applied like famous people's.
It's like, why do
voices
it?
Voices do it, yeah.
Like, spend your money elsewhere.
Like you said, cash grab.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Love or hate 3D movies, we'll say in the theater.
I think that if you want to do it, just do it right and find the right place for it. I think 3D movies are fun, and I think that they're, you know, when we go to the movies, we want an experience, you know? And I think that whenever something leaps off the screen, it doesn't necessarily take 3D for it to be able to do that. But I do think that there's like a novelty to that 3D effect that, you know, you don't get with most movies. And not every movie new. You don't want Forrest Gump in 3D. But what you do want are like those axes coming at your face and those lasers flying over it. Like, it's fun.
I'm personally with them on the second viewing.
Yeah.
I want to see the movie pure as it is.
That's a good
point.
The
first viewing, I'll go see it in the second viewing.
Right.
So that's where I'm at. So we'll move on.
Okay.
Love or hate Kevin Hart?
In movies or in comedy? Like stand-up?
In his movie roles.
Honestly, more often than not, I just sort of... I don't hate him. Oh, my God. You called this. I don't hate him. Like, I can't commit. I don't... I like him better as a stand-up comedian than I do as an actor. He's got some roles that are good, but it's also like, you know, if you are a stand-up comedian, that's an art in and of itself.
Yeah.
And if you want to try to make that work on the big screen or on the small screen, that's really great. That's cool. But that's a whole nother thing. Bill Burr did a great job with F is for Family. But he didn't just take his stand-up and put it on screen. He adopted his dad. You know, and sort of like combined it with his like flavor of comedy. Most of the funny moments in Kevin Hart films, I feel like, are where he's like, and it's like, okay, his comedy works a lot better on stage, I feel like, than his movies. But I mean,
he's a little bit like a Dane Cook, almost in that regard. Like his best stuff is when he's freaking out and making a big deal of things, I guess.
His early comedy was my favorite. Like when he was talking about when he was talking about his kids, I felt like one of the Netflix specials that he had, like post his wife and kids, it felt a little bit nuked. You know, it wasn't fresh. He was like,
I don't know, like too big time, I guess. I don't know.
Well, that's a great point because he had the whole thing behind him. Yeah, you're right. All right, I'm sorry. I'm making this lightning round last a lot.
No, it's all good. It's all good. So we'll move on. Love or hate, open seating at the theater as opposed to being able to select your own seat.
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I like open seating. If you want to arrive at the theater 2 hours early, then you deserve the seat. Like, I'm willing to get here earlier than you because I care enough about this movie to be here. And I think that matters, right?
Yeah. And the only reason I would oppose it is being able to know in advance if I'm going to have to sit in the front row.
The front row does suck. But if you go to a movie where you don't have to pick and you arrive an hour early, you ain't be craning your neck.
You get your snack. You get to watch those trailers. I mean, maybe an hour's a little much, but you get my drift.
You got a point. I got a handful more here. And this one's a little bit more general, but I threw it in here anyway. Love or hate reboots?
I would say...
And I know this is kind of like on a case-to-case basis, but sure. In general.
I think that, as a rule, I would say hate. Because I think that the reasoning for them... is not necessarily the right reason to bring them back.
But do you think it's more of a cash, like we're going to cash in on? Yeah,
I do. I think that, you know, there was a moment that was mentioned in AGFA's trailer horror trailer show, which I was talking about in my what I watched this week, where they talked about like what would happen if you gave underfunded films the chance to come back and remake their movie. You know,
with a big budget.
Well, or just a little bit more freedom. Like maybe because I don't know. I mean, they were just saying like it's interesting because a lot of the movies that end up getting this treatment are generally bigger pictures. I was like, okay, well, you had a fair shot to begin with, you know. If you gave somebody who made a direct-to-video movie the chance to come back and say, I want to reimagine this movie with some money because there were the people who liked it, That's what you reimagine. It's not the movie like Lion King. You don't go back and redo the Lion King. It just feels disingenuous.
Okay. We'll move on. Love or hate Rob Zombie? as a director.
Hate. I think I don't hate all of his movies.
Is this any way biased in his Halloween films?
That's it. That's the okay, let me just I'll backtrack for a second. I don't hate his original ideas. But also I listened to him talk about the Halloween experience and he didn't get to do exactly what he wanted to do. He was just mauled by the studio nonstop. I think Rob Zombie is an absolutely brilliant man. He knows what he's talking about. But when he gets mauled by the studio and you try to like meld those things together, I want to revisit what I said. I do not hate Rob Zombie as a director, but I do hate what happened to the Halloween franchise because that is the first thing that hops to the front of my mind. I like The Devil's Rejects.
House of a Thousand Corpses.
House of a Thousand Corpses and Lords of Salem. Like those movies are all his, and you can tell. At the end of the day, the man is an incredible horror icon, but I think that hillbilly horror that he brings doesn't belong in Halloween.
It sounds strange to say because it's about a serial killer, but it was just entirely too vulgar to me. I mean, the scene opens with the old man just cussing out Ryers' mom. And it's just like, this is where we're going with this.
I'd kind of like to see him start a brand new slasher franchise altogether.
Like, don't do Halloween. Just go. Do your thing. I think you could kill it. Do what you do best and make a slasher because you could kill it. That's my two cents. What do I know? Hats off to Rob Zombie for tackling music and movies, man.
Good job. So you're about on the fence with him then? You want to leave it out of like?
I love him. Okay. Because he's original. I don't love his Halloweens. But
you know, whether he's your speed or not, he is without a doubt an original voice in the industry. And as far as I'm concerned, we can always use more of that.
I love that. Love or hate, and you don't have to dive too much into this.
All right.
Because I know that we'll discuss this at a further episode. Films releasing both in theaters and on demand, such as HBO Max and such.
At the same time?
Yes.
Hate.
Simple enough. Love or hate, Jenny from Forrest Gump. I got him.
Hate.
Why?
You talk about one of the most pure individuals in cinematic history, it's Forrest Gump.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about one of the most manipulative people in cinematic history, Jenny Gump.
I agree. She's just a terrible person. I'm going to come back to you when you're a billionaire shrimp boater after I've AIDS. There's no lean. You hate.
Yes.
Okay.
Look, here's the deal.
You have a man here in Forrest Gump who was a living and breathing embodiment of selflessness. And then you have Jenny, who her entire life used this man whenever it suited her purposes and didn't come back until it was all too late. So
next question.
Okay. That was actually the end of this segment, but I wanted to add one more because I wanted, she's part of the Scumbag Hall of Fame. There might be another one here. Give me your opinion. Love or hate Grandpa Joe from Willy Wonka?
Holy smokes. What a great question. Grandpa Joe.
Let me just remind you. Grandpa Joe did not have the strength or the will to get off the couch to support his family.
but when he was told that he could go inside a chocolate factory, got up off the couch and started doing the Irish jig.
I don't know. I think that...
He let his family wallow in poverty for several years, several decades.
Yeah, you're right.
But he wanted to go get a candy bar, and so that excited all of a sudden he's got strength.
That's true. All right.
Maybe I asked this question out of my own.
No, I think you're right. I think that Grandpa Joe's a...
I didn't mean to sway you.
A heaping, steaming piece of dirtbag shit. Yeah, that's pretty rough, dude.
Poor Charlie. What is it? It was his birthday to get a chocolate bar? And he still didn't get the... he's just a scumbag.
Wow. Yeah, fair point.
I hate to talk so much about these people we hate on Valentine's Day. So, I'm going to double back here.
Let's do
and
it.
And I actually have a handful of Valentine's Day themes. I know let's this go. Is a let's cinema go. Podcast, but let's knock out a couple of these Valentine's Day themes while we're at it, okay?
Let's do it. Let's get in the spirit of the season.
Let's do it. Love or hate sweethearts candy, the little heart-shaped with the notes on them.
I like them, man.
You like them?
I really do. I don't know if it's because they tell me that I'm a cool cat or if that I'm worth it. But I like them.
And even I'll though they leave your mouth all chalky?
That's all right, dude. They leave a little warmth in my heart.
I love it. Love or hate Cupid?
Well, I think that Cupid is one of these guys that, you know, he's like on the borderline of being an assassin. Like, he floats around and shoots arrows at people. What's to prevent those things from being like real arrows? Only magic?
I think that's the next line of the Assassin's Creed games. Assassin's Creed Valentine.
It should be. I would just say that Cupid, man, no. I'm not a big fan. I think, you know, at the end of the day, when you think about what he's doing, shooting people to the heart, yeah.
Just forcing people to fall in love. That seems a little mean-spirited.
Yeah. Take a hike, Cupid.
Okay, so you lean in hate then. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Love or hate cooking your loved one a meal on Valentine's Day 100%. Instead of going out to eat?
100%. All day long. That's what I did last year.
You think that your fiance appreciated that more than going out to Outback? And
I don't know, man. I mean, I'm not a classic Italian cook, but I think it turned out pretty well.
I have one more, and I'm going to loft you the softest softball.
Oh, let me tonight. Hit it out the park. Let's go.
The very last love or hate. Your lady. Your fiance.
Love.
Nothing else?
Oh, yeah, dude. I got less than 2 months before I marry her, and it is the most exciting day that I can remember in my dirtbag life. I am so excited. It's been a long time coming, but you know, I'm excited to do it, and I could not have a better group of boys up there with me, and I in a million years cannot find a better lady to be all up there in white doing this whole marriage thing with me. So yes, happy Valentine's Day. What an episode.
I'm trying to compose myself over here is what I'm trying to do because you're out here making me cry. Not only showing the love for your woman, but to the dirtbags as well. And so I had a tremendous amount of fun making this episode.
We look forward to doing all sorts of holiday episodes coming up this year and many years to come, man. So
you got Patty's right around the corner. You pointed out.
So. Maybe a little Boondock Saints if you're lucky. We'll see what happens.
Very good. So, you know, if you got a loved one, hold her or him tight. If you don't, you don't need him anyway. Show a little bit of self-love. And we're going to cap this off by saying we will see you at the cinema, Dirtbags.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.